Welcome to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up on today's program, we'll head into the woods to find out how homeless people in our community are surviving winter nights armed with little more than blankets and tents. Plus, we'll find out what's next for community programs held at the Ocean City Church that was recently ravaged by a fire. And we'll show you how one church in Pocomoke City is telling the Christmas story like perhaps you've never heard or seen it before. But first, Governor Martin O'Malley announced on Tuesday a proposed notice of sale for nearly 80,000 acres for offshore wind development about 10 miles off the coast of Ocean City. The auctioning of this space could take place as early as next year, and it's just the third of its kind in the country. But some skeptics are wondering if this news means offshore wind is actually closer to becoming a reality, not just in the state, but in other states as well. So joining me to talk about this week's developments in the offshore wind conversation is Tommy Landers. He's the Maryland and D.C. Policy Director with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Tommy, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
Tommy, you were there on Tuesday as Governor O'Malley announced this notice of sale. Tell me what it was like to be in the room. And for you, is this the first big step in offshore wind becoming a reality in Maryland?
Yeah, I would say it is an exciting, important step in the progress towards offshore wind for Maryland. And it was a big day. It was a good crowd there yesterday. We were at this local company, the Maritime Applied Physics Corporation in southern Baltimore. And you had several officials from the federal government and Maryland state government and a lot of local businesses as well. And, of course, environmental groups like myself. And, yeah, I mean, this is what, of course, needs to happen. The federal government is going to lease, as you said, about 80,000 acres of land offshore, about 10 miles out from Ocean City. And once we get that up and running and a company gets that lease, they will start putting the pieces together to create an offshore wind farm off our coast.
Did it surprise you how quickly this all sort of moved forward? Because, you know, certainly in the last legislative session, offshore wind was approved and it passed through. Is this all kind of as expected, you know, right on schedule, this notice of sale and then the 60-day comment period and then the leasing auction? I mean, are we on schedule in your purview about where offshore wind should be in this process?
Yeah, and on this track, as the government officials explained yesterday, we could see wind turbines up and running by the year 2018. And, you know, from our perspective, we would have loved to have passed the bill a year earlier and just get the benefits sooner. But certainly that is a reasonable time frame. And, you know, a lot of it depends on the federal government's timing. It was not just up to Maryland. And we can see in Department of the Interior Secretary Sally Jewell yesterday talked a lot about how the president has prioritized climate action and more specifically offshore wind energy generation. So it's no surprise, but it's good to see this moving forward.
Yeah, I read a quote in the Post from Abigail Hopper, the director of the Maryland Energy Administration, and she was speaking to when we could see wind turbines off the coast of Ocean City, and she spoke about the 2018 prediction, and she called it a, quote, optimistic timetable, but we think it's possible. You know, there's a lot that it needs to be done to get to that point. And I guess we'll start with this 60-day comment period and then, of course, the leasing auction of the site itself. What kind of conversation do you expect to be going on during the 60-day comment period? Do you expect a lot of naysayers and opponents of offshore wind to come forward and to continue to sort of hammer their point home about why offshore wind shouldn't become a reality? Or do you think the discussions are going to be much more educational about, you know, how this is going to look and what it's going to mean for ratepayers and residents in the state?
Well, I think for the most part, you know, we've had a lot of that debate here in the state already over the past few years leading up to the passage of the bill that set the stage for what we're talking about right now. So I think, you know, I saw in the Baltimore Sun Representative Andy Harris on the Eastern Shore making some comments, and I'm sure there will be some naysayers along the way, but President Obama has clearly stated his priority of this kind of energy, and Maryland has embraced it. And I think the conversation will be more moving on about how do we actually tap into it and what are the details of the leasing and the financing and other aspects of just the actual logistics of the thing. So that's what I expect over the next few months and the next couple of years.
You know, let's talk about the actual nuts and bolts of all of this, because after the 60-day comment period, it's expected to go to a lease auction. Now, let's point to Virginia, because, you know, just a state away, in September, there was an auction of 112,000 acres off of the Virginia coast, which was won by Dominion Power. Do you have any sense of expected sort of front runners or potential bidders in the Maryland leasing process for this site off the coast of Ocean City?
Well, I don't know them by name, but I do think that, you know, there are several, I think around eight companies approximately a year ago or so that were interested in an earlier part of the process of getting these leases. And I do expect there to be interest from a number of companies. And last year during the legislative session, there were several that came to Annapolis to say that they would, you know, they would be interested in trying to win this this bidding process. So I do expect there to be a lot of interest.
There's been so much conversation about the cost of installing something like an offshore wind farm. It's a huge sort of overhead. What do you think, do you have any sense of what the bidding process for just the site itself is going to start at?
Well, you know, Brian, I can't speak to the exact numbers of what the leasing will cost. I mean, I think in terms of cost, we need to look at what climate change is costing us right now. I mean, Hurricane Sandy costs the region $60 billion, more than that, I believe $68 billion. And Maryland alone paid $70 million. Taxpayers paid $70 million in costs due to damage from extreme weather events like Hurricane Sandy, you know, threats to our agricultural industry, tourism in Ocean City. I think that as we think about these kinds of costs, I think we need to remind ourselves of the real and present danger and, you know, dollars and cents cost of climate change is reaping on us today.
Let's talk about the site itself for a minute. An analysis by the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory found that the area off the coast of Ocean City that we've been talking about could support between 850 and 1450 megawatts of commercial wind generation, which would essentially be enough to generate power in 300,000 homes. I know in past conversations you and I have talked about the problem isn't really the creation of the energy in the ocean. It's really a sense of how you get it back to the mainland. Talk about some of the hurdles that we still have to overcome in making offshore wind a reality.
Well, I'm glad you talk about like the road ahead, because this is just the first step, I think. And this leasing process was the third of its kind in the past few months that the federal government has started. There's been one in Rhode Island, and you mentioned the one in Virginia. And, you know, over time, we hope to see a network of interconnected offshore wind farms. And part of what we'll need is certainly transmission to get that energy to population centers. And I don't know if your listeners are aware, but the company Google and others have been talking about investing, and they are in the process of investing in a backbone transmission line that would actually be off the coast underwater.
Right. We've talked about that on the show when it first came out, and it's sort of like it's almost like a power strip of sorts, where it would be helping with that hurdle of how do you get the energy that's created from the offshore wind farms back to the population centers. Where is that in its development?
Well, I think that the investors there have been watching to see how things are moving along here. And I think that, and I hope that they're optimistic looking at the progress, you know, that I think over time will happen. And it's a matter of getting projects in the ground and up and running. And, you know, it's not something that's needed right away, right, this backbone transmission line. For the first few lines, we'll just need power lines coming into the shore and plugged into the substation in that area, and that way they'll be connected to the grid. I'm just saying that in the longer run, to have this bigger interconnected network, it will be greatly beneficial to have that backbone.
The first successful auction of an offshore wind site, it happened over the summer. It was for 164,000 acres off the Rhode Island and Massachusetts coastline. Do you expect that to be the first offshore wind farm in the United States that's up and running? And if so, when?
Well, I think a lot of people had been expecting the Massachusetts Cape Wind project to be the first. And, you know, I think that it's it's a matter of time. We'll see. I don't want to make a prediction. It would be nice for Maryland to be first, but I think even if Maryland is, you know, the second or third that's in the pipeline, I think that it will actually benefit, it could benefit Maryland because it will help put us sort of a sweet spot in terms of developing the industry and making Maryland a hub. I mean, the first actors can learn a bit about how the process goes and how to set up the supply chain and that kind of thing. And hopefully Maryland could benefit from that knowledge and make Maryland itself a hub for this industry.
Do you anticipate, I mean, going back to the 2018 prediction for when the offshore wind farm could potentially be off the coast of Ocean City up and running, do you think that around that time, 2017, 2018, is when we'll see the first offshore wind farm in the United States?
Well, you know, I hope not. I hope that we have, like I said, the one in Massachusetts or maybe Rhode Island before then. And hope, you know, Maryland hopefully will be shortly after that.
Tuesday's announcement triggers, as I said before, the 60-day public comment period. That period ends in February. Do you expect the auction to pretty much occur right after that public comment period?
I hope and expect that they will move, you know, with as much haste as they can. I know that President Obama has this plan for offshore wind energy called the Smart from the Start program, which I think is geared towards, you know, streamlining the process. And I think that the timeline will be as fast as it can be. And once you have a winning bidder, then that company will need to go through a process with the Maryland Public Service Commission, and they will have to meet a certain set of criteria, which involves, you know, looking at hiring labor workforce and minority involvement and a set of other criteria that will help, you know, help get, I think, the fairest project, the fairest deal for Marylanders.
We've been speaking with Tommy Landers. He's the Maryland and D.C. Policy Director with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Tommy, always nice to talk to you, and thanks so much for being here on Coastal Connection.
Thank you, Brian.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo, and we'll be right back.